City meeting to order, and we will start today with some work sessions. And I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2268. And committee, does anyone need to have someone come forward and remind us? Judith will remind us what the bill is, and then if you need any additional information, we'll call people forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2268 is a measure that exempts school bus manufacturers, dealers, and mechanics who operate school buses that are not transporting students from school bus endorsement requirements. It increases civil penalties to match the increase in federal penalties for both operators and owners of vehicles that violate commercial vehicle codes. The measure further eliminates the exemption for holders of farm endorsements for commercial driver license disqualifications, and it clarifies that indeed those farm endorsements allow the operation of tankers and double trailer combinations. It establishes that a holder of a commercial driver's license commits a serious violation if found to be recklessly driving and operating that vehicle over 30 miles per hour, more than the posted speed limit, with the court, in fact, imposing a suspension due to that operation, or that the vehicle is violating the speed limit by 100 miles per hour or greater. It allows a person receiving a lifetime suspension to apply to the department for a right to apply for again for a commercial driver's license or reinstatement after 10 years from the date of that lifetime suspension. And it finally defines a holder of a commercial driver's license as a person with that license that is either valid, expired for less than 1 year, or suspended but not canceled or revoked. We have no amendments on this particular measure. We have received no revenue impact. We have not yet actually received a fiscal on this one. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Committee, Representative Butler.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to make certain that where the original indication was that there may be a revenue impact, that we've determined at this point there is no revenue impact, and that we are in fact going to be moving this bill to another, or actually to the floor, is the intention.
There is not a subsequent referral currently on this measure.
Madam Chair, we did receive testimony from Jack Evans, Bob Russell, and others, and actually the questions which we posed during committee time, together with some findings, were actually mailed out to us under date of the 26th of January, and you have those in the record as explanations from Mr. Jack Evans, I understand, who is the legislative liaison over at the Department of Transportation. Seeing that there are no other referrals to this particular bill, I would move that we move this bill to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Any questions? Everybody? Okay. Representative Butler moves House Bill 2268 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. And I asked any discussion early, so I'll give you one more shot at this, everybody. Okay, hearing none. Those of the opinion House Bill 2268 should be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation will vote aye, and those opposed, no, and the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Butler?
Aye.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Chair Byer?
Aye. House Bill 2268, having received the required majority, is declared passed. Okay, so we will go to 2269. And Judith, remind us.
Carrier, for that matter, Chair.
Oh, yes. Oh.
George Gilman keeps waving his hand in the air for some reason.
I have not been raising my hand, but I will carry the bill.
Oh, thank you. I do think this probably needs to go with a carrier. Thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair, members, House Bill 2269 increases the fees for the issuance of motor vehicle registration plates. It would set that fee by determining the actual cost and rounding up to the next highest half dollar, then adding $1 for a single plate, $2 for each pair of plates. The money collected is distributed 50% to the Department of Transportation, 30% to counties, and 20% to cities. We have received a minimal fiscal impact statement on the measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I do want to clarify the, and I think I'll go ahead and bring ODOT up, but the extra, I was trying to listen to her explanation. The $2 goes to city and county, and the remainder, yes, I'm sorry, I need to listen a little closer. Maybe Jack doesn't need to be here, but if anyone has any questions or reminders of what's going on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't remember, what was the Department of Transportation going to do with the additional revenue? What was it dedicated towards?
Chair Beyer, Representative Smith, the extra revenue goes to the highway fund, and that in turn is a portion between cities, counties, and ODOT. And actually, of the so let me give you a scenario. Of the $5 for the license plate fee for a pair of plates, $2.91 is the average weighted cost. That's what we that's our manufacturing cost, if you will. $2, then that's rounded up to $3. $2 goes to the cities and counties to be split 60-40, and the remaining 9 cents at this point of time goes to the highway fund. And that the difference between the $3 and the weighted average cost of $2.91. That 9 cents then is apportioned as the highway fund is, and I believe it's 25% to counties and 15% to cities, and then the rest goes to ODOT.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I wondered if that was responsive to Representative Smith's question as to what the devil they're going to do with that 9 cents, though.
I'm not that hungry. I know I'm conservative, but not that conservative.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, are you wanting a motion?
I would like a motion.
Desperately.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2269 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Tomei has moved House Bill 2269 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none. Those of the opinion House Bill 2269 should be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Butler?
Aye.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Chair Beyer?
Aye. The motion having received the required majority is declared passed.
Madam Chair, do you think this would be an appropriate bill to be on the consent agenda?
Is there any objection to that?
Madam Chair, I don't express any objection, but this was the bill that we had folks that came forward and had some angst about for various constitutional reasons, as I recall.
Yes.
But that said, I think that probably is an appropriate motion.
Thank you. All right. Consent calendar then. Close the work session on House Bill 2269 and open a work session on House Bill 2271.
Madam Chair, members, HB 2271 is the measure that modifies the definition of registration weight to include loaded weight. It would, in fact, declare an emergency effective upon passage. We have received a no fiscal impact on the measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Well, committee members, if there's a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2271 to the floor at the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. And any discussion? Seeing no discussion. Oops. Oh, House Representative My tongue is not working today.
Here, spit it out in Daddy's hand.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2271 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I've done the discussion. Another chance to have your piece here. And hearing none, those of the opinion House Bill 2271 should be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Beyer.
Aye. The motion having received the required majority is declared passed.
Madam Chair, do you think this would be an appropriate one to be on the consent calendar also?
I think it's appropriate. Thank you. Without objection. Okay. Close the work session on 2271 and open a work session on House Bill 2272.
Madam Chair, members, House Bill 2272 adds compliance with low emission standards as a requirement for registration of vehicles beginning with the model year 2009. It does direct the Department of Transportation to promulgate rules defining what constitutes compliance with those lower standards and vehicles that would be exempt from that requirement. It does require, however, that those rules be consistent with the Environmental Quality Commission standards, and it defines a new motor vehicle to mean a motor vehicle with odometer reading 7,500 miles or less. We have received a no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact statement on this measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2272 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2272 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've had an excellent opportunity to both have hearings as well as to have experienced some information exchanged back and forth from various concerned folks over this issue. I think that it's been a long, hard fought battle, but the reality is we know where we're at today in relationship to where we perhaps were at the same time a couple of years ago. That said, we've had a number of folks that have expressed concerns both ways, but my hope is that now with the uniformity on the West Coast, the way that it is, and the questions which had been posed in the last session concerning the possibility of folks trying to back around this particular piece of legislation, that we've actually put it in forward gear, and we're going to stay in forward gear and not look behind us. So I think Representative Tomei's motion is in order and that we should proceed forward, however we may have felt about the issue and how it was brought to us and how we ended up where we're at today. Thank you.
Thank you. I couldn't agree more. Any more discussion? Representative Butler.
Madam Chair, I take this to mean, though, that we will not get the road trip with Representative Butler.
That extra 7,500 miles I was really looking forward to. 7,501 miles.
I was going second.
Thank you.
Determined I couldn't do it.
So. Okay. Those of the opinion that House Bill 2272 should be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation should vote aye, and those opposed, no, and the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Butler votes aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Beyer.
Aye. House Bill, the motion having received the required majority is declared passed. I close the work session on House Bill 2272. Colleagues, do I have a volunteer for a carrier, or do we?
I'd like to volunteer Representative Butler, not MTA.
I was going to say
to volunteer for that.
Okay. Representative Butley, any all in favor? Okay. I think what I'm going to do is open a public hearing on House Bill 2062 and 2063 together.
Madam Chair, members, just briefly, House Bill 2062 requires operators and passengers of Class 1 and Class 3 all-terrain vehicles to wear a motorcycle helmet with fastened chin straps. I have provided the definition of Class 1 and Class 3 ATVs for your easy reference.
Thank you.
And then, Madam Chair, HB 2063 prohibits operators of Class 1 and Class 3 ATVs from carrying passengers that are not designed for that purpose, and it does establish an offense punishable by a fine of $180. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
This is the physician that is reporting.
He's here.
Needs to go back up to me.
Okay. I'm going to call Larry Runk and Dr. Seth
Eisenberg.
That's right.
Forward.
Larry Runk.
Okay. Let's see.
Seth Eisenberg, ma'am.
I'm going to go ahead and start over here with Mr. Runk.
Okay.
I think he has. Identify yourself again and where
Larry
you're from.
Larry Runk, spelled R-U-N-K. I am a retired Oregon State Police officer. And for the last 9 years, I've worked a U.S. Forest Service contract patrolling the Oregon Dunes.
Thank you.
In those 9 years, I have investigated several fatal accidents. I've assisted in many more. Approximately 90 to 100 serious accidents that I've investigated where they've been transported off the sand or life flighted somewhere. All the major manufacturers, Honda, Yamaha, Kawasaki, Suzuki, all have warning labels on their quads, their Class 1 quads, reminding people not to carry passengers. It's recommended that for some time, unless the, of course, the quad or Class 1 is specifically designed to carry two, according to this bill. I could probably sit here all afternoon and tell you horror stories that I've seen and investigated out on the Oregon Dunes. That's not my choice to do. 4 years ago, there was a man with his four-year-old boy on the front of his quad. There is no speed limit on the dunes. He was traveling pretty fast, came around a small dune and ran into the side of a Dodge Durango. He was killed. The little boy survived but did receive a broken femur, which is serious enough in itself. I have seen several of these type accidents. He could have probably negotiated the turn if he didn't have somebody in front of him. Unfortunately, his wife was riding about 25 feet behind him and rode up on the accident. May I approach the chair?
Give it to staff and they'll bring it to us.
I only found a couple. I just moved recently into a new home, and some of my pictures are still in boxes in the garage. But I did find a couple, and I thought maybe I'd pass them on to the committee and let them take a look. If you'll notice in the one photograph, there are three people on that quad. There is a gray belt around the adult. You can't tell from that picture, but it's also around the child in front of him. And, of course, then he has a baby in a backpack. If that's not serious enough for people to consider these things. I've seen women with babies in front packs and backpacks out on Oregon, riding on the Oregon Dunes. And basically I'm here to support the measure 2062 and 2063. If you have any questions of me regarding 2064, I'll be glad to answer them.
Okay. All right. Dr. Eisenberg.
Chair, Representative Beyer, and members of the House Transportation Committee. My name is Seth Eisenberg. I am a trauma surgeon at Legacy Emanuel Hospital. I am here today to testify in favor of both House Bill 2062 and 2063, requiring that helmets be required on operators and passengers of all ages on Class 1 and 3 vehicles, and that we prohibit passengers on vehicles not designed for passengers. In my job as a trauma surgeon, I've taken care of many patients whose lives have been changed forever because of head, spine injuries suffered in ATV crashes. Many of these injuries could have been prevented or avoided or lessened in severity if helmets had been worn. According to the State Trauma Registry, between 2000 and 2005, 1,795 admissions for ATV accidents through the trauma system in Oregon. The cost of treating these injuries was over $50 million. From 9101 to 83106, Trauma Service at Legacy Emanuel, one of the two level one trauma centers in the state of Oregon, has taken care of 246 patients from the ATV crashes, injured severely enough to be admitted through the trauma system. 190 of these patients were 18 or over, age group affected by this bill. We already have legislation requiring helmet use for children under 18. Of the patients 18 and over, 67% were not wearing helmets at the time of their crash. 61% of the helmets patients not wearing helmets had head or facial injuries, compared to 46% of the patients wearing helmets. Patients not wearing helmets were also more than twice as likely as patients wearing helmets to sustain both head and spine injuries, 15% versus 6%. These injuries are very costly, and the general public, both in increased insurance costs and increased taxes, carries this cost. It's only reasonable to expect that people on ATVs be required to wear helmets to lessen this burden. And in a review of 46 studies, the U.S. accounting offices found that helmeted motorcycle riders have up to a 73% lower fatality rate than unhelmeted riders. Because of the speeds of the vehicles, ATV users need the same protection. In addition, not noted here, we have seen numerous accidents to the passenger, often children, riding on a vehicle not designed to be used by more than one person. On a personal note, although it says here it's extremely difficult to explain to the families of the patients that the injuries will last a lifetime, this pales in comparison with having to go out and tell someone that their child or their son, daughter, husband, wife has a brain injury and will never recover or has died as a result of a failure to wear a helmet. I can't tell you what that's like. It is one of the worst things you ever have to do. And the devastation that this causes families is just, the injury affects the whole family forever. I thank you for allowing me to present this data and for allowing me to testify, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Butler?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This would be a question for retired Officer Runk. I noticed from the pictures at the dunes that both of these folks appear to be in the dunes. How many people go to the dunes and actually are riding multiple passengers on quads? What percentage?
I don't know that I can give you a specific number, but there's roughly 1.2 million people ride the Oregon Dunes every year. And I can't give you the percentage, but it happens quite frequently.
So
you will probably hear testimony against two people on quads. The helmets and two people on quads has been The law has been in effect in California for quite some time, and Oregon is the only one that hasn't enacted that law. And I'm not adverse to people, you know, wanting to ride with their kids, but for the safety factor alone, it's very, very important that something come about that we restrict that.
Madam Chair, I just need to have an idea. Are we talking about a third of the vehicles that are out there, a tenth of them, a hundredth of them? Is it half?
I would probably say between a third and a quarter people out there riding. There's this last summer, there was a 12-year-old riding a quad that was just a little bit too big for him. However, he had all the riding equipment. He had the riding boots, the pants, the shirt. He had the chest and back protector, shoulder protector, had a helmet. He had all the riding gear, but yet he went off the seawall, and the quad went on top of him and crushed him, killed him. He was 12. I mean, I could sit here all day and give you these happenings, but that's not my aim. I'm just here to support these two House bills.
Madam Chair, perhaps I'm missing the intent of this bill. It requires the operators and passengers to wear the helmets and fasten chin straps. That wouldn't have protected this youngster, but if I get the gist of the testimony, it's about approximately a third, which would be somewhere in the vicinity of about 400,000 users out in the dunes in Oregon would be precluded from doing what they have been doing in the past.
That would be a good explanation for something like that. There's a lot of people, especially the young adults, on Class 1 that don't wear helmets at all. Okay. Most of the young riders for Class 3, they do.
And I just have a general question for both Mr. Runk and Dr. Eisenberg, and that is, are you familiar with, in your professional experiences, of a time when a chin strap did not hold?
No, I have not.
In any kind of an accident?
In
motorcycle or quad?
We have seen motorcycles accidents in excess of speeds of 100 plus miles an hour, approaching 120, and I think I've seen one fail, but that's one at a speed of estimated in excess of 120 miles an hour.
Never in a stop sign situation. Follow up, if I may.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Never in a stop sign situation where a passenger on a motorcycle or a motorcycle driver was hit, that the chin strap failed and did not protect the head.
Chair Representative Beyer and Representative Butler. No, I have not.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Beyer. Officer, you have a lot of experience out monitoring riders throughout Oregon. You showed us those pictures. Would you classify those parents as reckless?
If you define reckless in the motor vehicle code, it curtails quite a bit, not just that. But I would classify that as endangering a child passenger.
That's a statute on the books?
That's a statute on the books.
You say the parents are being negligent?
Absolutely.
Is that on the books?
Yes, it is. The children that are out riding, if they're not riding with an 18-year-old or their parents in visual range, the parents can be cited for endangering.
What, if I may follow up, mm-hmm. So what would stop an officer of the law? Thank you. What would stop an officer of the law from issuing a ticket for reckless endangerment or for negligence if they saw that type of circumstance?
Well, there wouldn't be anything that would prohibit that.
So we already do, if I may follow up. So we already do have statutes on the books that could assist an officer should they witness what they view to be reckless endangerment or negligence.
So they're on the books.
Thank you.
The House Bill 2063, if passed, would prohibit two people in quads. It doesn't necessarily mean little children. It could be two young adults or two adults.
If I may follow up. I've been on our dunes, ride there all the time. They're pretty big parks,
mm-hmm.
pretty extensive. Has a quad ever broke down on a person?
Yes.
Has a person ever needed a ride back to the park?
Yes.
Would this legislation prohibit that?
No. So we can take the person in our patrol vehicle back to...
Let me rephrase my question. I'm out riding with my young son. His quad digs into the sand. His quad breaks down. His quad runs out of fuel. I want to safely, 3, 4, or 5 miles an hour, give him a ride back the 3, 4, or 5 miles back to the state park. Wouldn't this prohibit that?
I don't believe so. When you have selective enforcement, those kind of considerations are always taken.
Follow-up? If we have selective enforcement, do we not have the ability to selectively charge someone with reckless endangerment or negligence?
Yeah, I would say that it depends on the circumstances.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. Dr. Eisenberg, thank you for coming here and taking the time to give us your point of view. Mr. Rung, can you tell me what the speed capability of a Class 1 all-terrain vehicle is? How fast do they go? Roughly.
A Banshee, roughly 70, 75 miles an hour.
Thank you.
A 660 Raptor, about the same. Of course, the smaller quads, 90cc's and 100cc's, obviously are a lot less. But the only speed limit that are down there is on the state park's beaches at 25 miles an hour.
I would share with you, I have a Kawasaki 750, and I can get up to 80, 85, if I chose to. If I chose to.
Please keep an eye out, or tell your colleagues to keep your eye out.
Thank you. Any other questions? I have just a couple comments, I guess. This bill definitely does not include private property, right?
No, it does not.
Okay. And I just, and before you leave, I just want to make sure that you've got, I don't want to have to call you back up. And did you have any more comments on 2463 as opposed to your comments referred to both of them?
No.
Okay.
I thank you for letting me come in and testify.
Thank you for coming.
Madam Chair, we'll have an opportunity to ask a question about agricultural use, I assume, during this process at some point.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I'm going to call Tom Niemela. Hopefully I didn't butcher that too much.
It's wonderful.
That'd be a first, right?
That's why most people go refer to me as Tom. It's much easier. Okay, I'm up here by myself. I'm here representing the Oregon.
Can you
spell his last name?
Yeah.
Sorry. My last name is spelled N as in Nancy, I E M as in Mary, E L A.
And can you tell us where you're from?
I'm from Hillsborough.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So, excuse me, not used to doing this, so bear with me. I'm here representing the Oregon Motorcycle Riders Association. It's a statewide sanctioning body for motorbikes and now ATVs. So, first off, I'd like to say that as the OMRA, we were a little disappointed that we weren't asked about these proposals by state parks, since we're such a large, we're the only statewide sanctioning motorcycle and, like I said, now ATV body in Oregon. Been around for 30-plus years. Thank you, Mayor. So, we were a little disappointed we weren't contacted, but hindsight is good. Anyway, the big concern that we had primarily was the passenger safety one. I personally grew up in Southern Oregon. My dad put me on his motorbike in front of him, and we'd go out on some back trails or back roads. And, you know, we weren't doing wheelies. We weren't doing jumps. We weren't doing any crazy things. It was just very casual riding, and those are some very fond memories. I've done the same with my daughter, other friends' kids. It's great. I have a concern about the passenger safety thing. Clearly, that's focused at people that are they're out of control. I don't ride at the dunes. I've ridden there a few times, but I've seen accidents too, and it's not just two up. And my concern is that this bill is going to focus at it looks like it's focused at class one and class three, which as a primarily a motorbiker, I have concerns about that. But on the quads things too, that was a very good question that you brought up. If I'm out riding with my daughter on her vehicle and it breaks down, do I take her back? I could easily be cited. So that's a big concern. I just feel that it's pretty vague, and it takes, I don't know how kids will get into the sport at a young, excited about it, as I did, and many other kids that I've helped teach and train how to ride at an early age. If you can't make them bond, type deal. That's pretty much in a nutshell. Do you have any questions?
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Niemela, can you explain, because I'm not a rider.
Mm-hmm.
Some vehicles are made to have passengers capacity, but apparently your vehicle is not, that you take your child on.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a huge additional cost to have vehicles? Excuse me, it's contagious here. with the passenger capacity?
For example, if when my daughter was very young, 6 years old,
mm-hmm.
I would put her on the seat in front of me, and we would just go out in first or second gear, back out of the way, just putsy, wonderful time. Right now, there's already existing rules within the state as far as a passenger behind you, and the rule is that their feet have to touch the foot pegs.
Right.
Absolutely logical.
Okay.
Don't want their feet to get tangled in the wheel or whatever, you know.
Right.
So with regards to that, and with regards to a quad too, I personally don't see what the problem is with that. If you're going at a a reasonable speed and you're just going very controlled and under adult supervision, clearly you are.
Right.
For example, my daughter and my friends' kids, they on motorbikes, the handlebar comes up, and there's usually a crossbar right there, and that's where they hang on. And quite honestly, I had a dog that liked to go riding like that too. So
there's nothing in this. Well, actually, passengers, a dog could actually be defined as passenger. If, for instance, Mr. Niemela, the law would say can have a passenger up under a certain age, for instance, or under a certain speed. Would that be workable for you? Would something like that say a child under the age of 8 and at no more of speed than 20 miles per hour? Is that the kind of riding you've done with your children?
That's a very good question. where to draw find a workable line there? I've been riding motorbikes since 69. I think I can easily take my, my kid when she was younger, riding out and go 40 miles an hour down a gravel road, very casual, making sure no deer is going to jump out in front of us or something like that. But as far as an age limit, I'm quite honestly, shouldn't that be up to the parents? Mr. Runt talked about people carrying kids in their, infants in their backpacks. I mean, that's just crazy. I think there should be some kind of logical reasoning on that. I haven't thought about that offhand, but I like the idea.
Thank you.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, you mentioned, and I'm looking at specifically House Bill 2063, you mentioned the issue of your daughter having the foot pegs, using the foot pegs. Would that, do you think, mean that is a vehicle designed to carry passengers if they have the foot pegs, or are those foot pegs placed on as an aftermarket?
Almost all foot pegs are placed on, depending from the factory, you know, like on a street legal vehicle. An off-road trail bike, they never, just that are strictly for off-road, they never come with foot pegs. But I myself and many friends put them on there if we want to carry our girlfriends or wives around. If we're going from one spot and we want to have a picnic on top of a mountain somewhere on a back dirt road. So well, you can put foot pegs on there. As far as the child in the front, her feet easily rest on the engine cases.
Follow up, if I may.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this bill talks about that a person that does not violate this section, and this is the section under 2063, which prohibits the carrying of passengers on these vehicles. You do not violate that if the person carries a passenger when the manufacturer authorizes it to be a passenger carrying quad. Are the quads that you're talking about taking your wife or children on, are they designed then for a passenger? Would the manufacturer recommend that they carry one passenger, a driver plus one passenger? Are they good?
The vehicles that are made nowadays, a large percentage of them can easily carry a passenger. I know a lot of people within the big four Japanese manufacturers, and they would not put anything on that for our litigious society, you know, liability's sake.
But follow up, if I may, I just wondered what the manufacturer recommends. Does the manufacturer recommend one person on them, and that's all?
I think, you know, on a motorbike is made for primarily one person, yes.
Okay, and then we're talking now about Class 1 and Class 3 all-terrain vehicles that excuse me, Madam Chair, I want to make sure that we're talking about all-terrain vehicles, not motorcycles.
On this proposal, I read, Mr. Buckley, that it's both Class 1 and Class 3. Maybe I misread that.
Okay, and a final question. Tom, in as much as you're representing today the Oregon Motor Vehicle Riders Association, OMRA, there's some indication that there's something in excess of 1.2 million trips out just to the sand dunes here in Oregon. Have any idea, or does your organization marshal facts and information relative to the economic impact wherever there are dunes and what kind of fiscal impact that creates to have 1.5 million riders per year, 1.5 million folks bringing the rigs out, what kind of fiscal impact that is for those local communities versus cutting that figure by perhaps a third overnight?
It's a pretty major amount of dollars that you're talking there. And that's centered around primarily the dunes, of course, the Coos Bay area and all that. I'm primarily wanting to represent the dunes and the entire state of Oregon. I know, like Mr. Runk was talking strictly on the Oregon dunes. And that's just that's like with an Oregon going down and go bowling in Medford. That's just one location, but there's plenty of bowling alleys.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that's responsive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to go ahead and call Tim Wood and Kikenstone.
I have 6 ATVs.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tim Wood, the Director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and we're sponsoring this legislation. And Kylene Stone, who is our Assistant Director for Recreation Programs and Planning, has overall responsibility for managing our responsibilities with regard to the ATV program. And Kylene would like to introduce our position on this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Kylene Stone, Assistant Director, Recreation Programs and Planning, Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Jim has handed out our testimony, copies of our testimony. And also a copy of a 2005 staff report on some statistics that we gathered on ATV safety that may help you as you're looking through this issue. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm here today asking for your support for House Bill 2062. As you've heard, this bill will protect the health and safety of off-highway vehicle riders and passengers in public riding areas. In general, this House Bill 2063 will require operators of dirt bikes and three- and four-wheel ATVs to wear helmets when they are recreating on public lands. Currently, under current law, only those under the age of 18 are required to wear helmets. This is one of four bills submitted by the governor aimed at saving lives and reducing injuries for people who are recreating on ATVs and with dirt bikes. And we believe this bill is important in reducing the number of deaths and serious injuries among citizens and visitors. It puts into law longstanding recommendations of safety advocates and of the all-terrain vehicle manufacturers. As a point of background, you may be wondering why the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department is involved in this legislation. Back in 2000, the ATV grant allocation was transferred from the Department of Transportation to Parks and Recreation Department. And since we took that program over, we have begun to observe, as we gained familiarity, we've observed a number of serious injury and death accidents of people who are recreating on ATVs. So we began to consider what we might be able to do to help reduce the rate of deaths and accidents. And we have met with a number of ATV constituents to solicit support for new and different methods of approaching the accident rate in public riding areas. In 2006, we contracted with Oregon State University to help us look at the situation as it relates to ATV safety. OSU reviewed best practices from other states, and they conducted a series of surveys with subject area experts. Surveys of local law enforcement officials revealed a couple of findings. One of them was that the lack of a requirement for helmets for adults seemed to be creating some additional injuries and serious accidents for people. It wasn't creating the accidents, but the accidents had a bigger, more significant impact on people's lives. And then also, I'm going to combine the two testimonies here, but for passengers, then that was the bigger issue for law enforcement, and they identified a lot of accidents that were caused or injuries that were resulting on people who were passengers on ATVs and motorbikes. Back to the helmets. According to the American Association of Orthopedic Surgeons position statement, the helmet provides the best protection available against death or serious disabling ATV injuries. And the Consumer Product Safety Commission's 2005 annual report of ATV deaths and injuries reported that helmets could have saved the lives of nearly 25% of the people who died from head injuries in ATV-related accidents around the nation. We have met with many ATV constituents and others to determine support for a law requiring helmets. Overall, support has been expressed to us, and the support has significantly outpaced opposition. Supporters who have come to us have ranged from safety advocates, medical professionals, ATV manufacturers, many individual riders, and several ATV clubs and groups. We have, however, heard some opposition, as you've already heard today. In particular, relating to helmets, we've heard that people think that helmets are uncomfortable. Some worry about being able to hear well when they're riding and wearing a helmet, and then others don't like the idea of the law being imposed upon them that they would have to wear a helmet. They believe it ought to be a free choice. Related to House Bill 2063, the support, again, has been generally favorable. Support has come to us from safety advocates, medical professionals, individual riders, and several ATV clubs and groups. And the opposition that we have heard, very similar to what you heard a few minutes ago, husbands indicating that their wives would not drive an ATV and they wouldn't recreate with them any other way than riding double. Some mothers, fathers, and grandparents have expressed concern because they would not be able to take their child or grandchild for a ride as they had traditionally been doing. Neither of these bills applies to riding on private property unless the property is expressly open to the public for the purpose of ATV recreation. In other words, this law only would apply on private land if the owner of the property opened it up for people to use. It does not apply to ATVs used for farming, agricultural, forestry operations, nursery or Christmas tree operations, or on land owned or leased by the owner of the vehicle. So, for example, if a rancher leases some property from BLM and they were doing, they were on that property on their ATV, this would not apply to them. That's the summary of our position on these two bills. The Oregon Parks and Recreation Department respectfully requests the committee's support in creating these laws that will reduce deaths and injuries for ATV drivers and riders. Thank you. Representative Tillman.
Ms. Stone, you mentioned that there were ATV groups that were supportive, at least they were involved in your group. Do you have any written support from those groups?
From the ATV groups specifically? Yes, we do. We could provide that for you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. Multiple questions, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I get on the record and everyone hears this, that minors are required to wear helmets in the state of Oregon.
That is correct.
Okay. Lots of ratios and numbers have been tossed around with lots of words like lots and many and whole bunch. Can you give us hard facts on what's the ratio of annual rides to accidents?
We don't have that data. I do have some data, though, that I did forget to give in my testimony. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Smith. Related to the passengers, there were 109 ATV-related deaths in Oregon between 1984 and 2004.
So,
overall. Yes.
Can you repeat that?
Yes. There were 109 ATV-related deaths in Oregon between 1984 and 2004.
So that would work out to how many deaths a year on that?
Five. Representative Smith, approximately five a year.
And those five deaths are based upon how many annual rides?
Several hundred thousand.
Okay.
Yep. Has there been any analysis of how those deaths compare to other activities with inherent risk?
Running with scissors, for instance.
Well, and Madam Chair, I don't mean to make light of this, but we're here with an agency coming before us using terms like lots and many, and I think it's incumbent upon us to get a fair assessment of what lots and many mean. And right now what I'm hearing is five deaths over hundreds of thousands of annual rides. If I can ask a follow-up question.
Okay.
I'll go to House Bill 2063. It's applicable to both House bills. If you go to line 19, it says the passenger restriction does not apply if the all-terrain vehicle is used exclusively in farming, agriculture, or forestry operations. What if someone has an all-terrain vehicle that is used primarily for agriculture and then used on weekends for recreation?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the intent is that if the vehicle is owned by somebody who's engaged in agricultural operations, that if they were to use that vehicle on their own property, whether it be for agricultural related or for whatever personal use, the intent is that the exception is in place there.
Do you want to go ahead and re-identify yourself?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. My name is Tim Wood, Director of the Parks and Recreation Department.
Thank you.
Follow up.
Yes.
When you were putting together your focus groups who support this, did you have the insurance executives participate in your forum to share with you the fiscal impact on the state of Oregon or on health care costs in general?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we have some estimates of costs and impact on health care. I don't know that we specifically involved insurance folks in the collection of that data when the OSU study was done, but I can get that information for you, what we have.
Follow up.
Yes.
I'm assuming law enforcement was part of the focus group?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that's correct.
Okay. Can I just ask one or two more? I come from rural Oregon. ATVs are a way of life. What if a hunter gets an elk down, he and his buddy, and they want to pull the elk out, and they want to ride on the back of the ATV to pull the elk out on a country road going 5 to 8 miles an hour? Are they going to be in violation of the law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I think I'd have to refer to the law enforcement folks on that. I think it's a question of the sort of the selective enforcement that Mr. Runk, that issue that he raised earlier. I don't know if a country road is a road that's open for...
Let's just say a trail.
Yeah, for a trail, and it's open for public use and on public property, open for public use. I would say that the law applies. I would believe, though, that I'd have to refer to or defer to the law enforcement folks to use judgment on how they might apply it in that case.
One last question, then I'll be done. What if someone's out in the woods and they find a lost hiker? Are they able to ride the person back without being stopped and asked? Is there a presumption of guilt by having a rider on the back of their ATV?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think to the letter, I'm not a law enforcement person. But
well, you're bringing the bill forward, so I think it's fair to ask the question.
I understand. And to the letter of the law, I think that it's in violation of the law. In application of the law, given the circumstances, I think that's a judgment call that law enforcement officials would have to make.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to follow up this issue of primarily used in the farming, agriculture, and forestry operations. So if a piece of equipment, a four-wheeler, is used both on the farm and off the farm for weekend recreating, then would that make that piece of equipment no longer validly exclusively used for farming, so that a farming operation could be tainted by having allowed the rig to run in the state parks and the national dunes?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, just for clarification, we don't have any ATV parks or any state parks where ATV operation is permitted. The only exception to that is a very small portion of Honeyman where we allow access onto the dunes recreation area. But to your question regarding, does that violate the exclusivity if a rancher were to take his ATV and take it to the dunes for use? I would interpret that to be that as long as the vehicle is used on private property, that the exclusion is in place. Once the vehicle would be operated for recreational purposes on property that's provided for public use, then the law would be applicable.
If I may follow up.
Yes.
So if I have someone who is using it exclusively for farming and agriculture purposes, and let's say again in my country where we have irrigators that work from one end of the field to the other, and they pick each other up and road each other back on a four-wheel drive or a 4x4 quad, an all-terrain quad, would they be in violation as they then went back up to the head rows if they are using a public right-of-way?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I'm not familiar with the law, whether the law... I believe that since the ATVs are not street legal vehicles, they're not allowed to operate on public roads under any circumstance. But to your question about traveling from one portion of the ranch to another, as long as it's on private property, this law would not apply.
And Madam Chair, I'd just like to call the director's attention that nearly 70% of Oregon is owned publicly. So we've got to be very cautious when we talk about as long as it's on private property, because I have a lot of farms and ranches that depend upon that public property, and my concern is that, yes, they may have a right to lease it, but it is still public property. And I appreciate the fact that it talks about that which is exclusively leased, but my concern still is that somehow these folks would be in violation. I have one other question relative to these quads. Does the state of Oregon or any of its agencies or any other municipal agency that you're aware of own any of these quads?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I can't speak for other agencies, but we do own several of them ourselves, and we use them for the purposes of training and for demonstration purposes.
Okay, and if I could follow up. At no time are those ever used in the fashion which we've been talking about here today. No one has ever ridden on those two at a time.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I can't say that no one has ever done that, but it wouldn't be endorsed by the department, and if this law were put in place, it would be as applicable to those employees as it would the general public.
And so just a final question. So in an emergency situation, if the state police happened to have a dozen of these that they were using for patrolling the dunes and those kinds of things, and they were to come upon someone with a broken leg, then it would be just as illegal for them to carry someone out under this law as it would be for you or I to do that.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I believe that's the case, but I can't speak as to any exceptions that might be allowed for law enforcement.
Madam Chair, there's certainly no exceptions written in here anywhere, and it is the department's bill, so I was anxious about that. Thank you.
Chair, Representative Butler, if I may, on the question regarding public property, where it talks about using on public property, it's not public property in total, but public property that is designated open for use of ATVs is the way that's applied.
And Madam Chair, I just have to say too that in those places where these are licensed, many of my irrigators will move from farm to farm and ranch to ranch with their dog, and the dog is usually on the basket in the back, and with the shovel back there and the other paraphernalia that you need for these kinds of things. And there's no exception for this. And my concern is that as a result of this, that I'm going to end up with the dog having to get his own license and start to run his own ATV. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Butler. I think we needed that, right? Any other questions?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Madam
Chair. That's right.
Yes.
Sorry.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out other materials that we've been given. This one, which I've just glanced at, but it did state that in Oregon between 1999 and 2004, 18 children under the age of 18 died as a result of ATV injuries. 55% were drivers, 17 were passengers. The average age of death was 13.7 years. And only two of those children, even though it was the law, only two of those children were wearing helmets. I want to point out, too, that between 2000 and 2004, there were 10 people who died on the dunes. Anyway, Representative Smith, you were wanting some facts and figures, so I might direct you to look at these, and you'll get some facts and figures.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Terry DeWitt.
Good afternoon. My name is Terry DeWitt. I represent Applegate Rough Riders from Salem and Northwest Quad Riders, who covers the three Northwest states. There's been a few questions here that I think I can answer as far as quads go. The first one is how many are designed for two-up use. Currently, only two manufacturers of quads make a quad that is designed for a passenger. Polaris, I know for a fact, states that there is no passenger under the age of 12 to be allowed on the quad. We've talked a lot about riding on the dunes. We have not talked any about riding in the forest. Representative Smith rides a sport quad. Personally, two people on a sport quad going 70 miles an hour across the dunes should not be allowed.
That's right.
I ride a utility quad. My utility quad is designed, if I get an elk when I'm out hunting, that I can put up to 450 pounds on my rear rack. There's no reason that I could not put a approved seat on my rear rack and haul a passenger that weighs less than 450 pounds. So we have two circumstances. We have a sport quads. We have utility quads. We have my son, who is 5 years old, who is not able to ride on a rear seat, but rides in front of me. How else does he learn trail etiquette, responsibility, other than being out there? For example, we were riding this last weekend, and it was raining. I reached up to wipe off my goggles. He reaches up and puts on the brakes because I was riding with one hand, and he thought I should slow down. Okay, this is how they learn. If you make it to where children cannot go out and learn from their parents, you just wait until they're old enough to go out on their own, and you turn them loose, by that time they're almost teenagers. They know everything. They have to be out there with their parents, doing family activities, learning responsibility. Now, I understand the need to make some rules, but we've talked about selective enforcement. We have negligent riders who are out on the dunes riding 60 miles an hour with full-grown adults on a sport quad. Personally, those people are crazy, and they should be cited. But that rule does not apply to everybody. We have those rules for negligence and reckless driving in force. There's no reason to make a new law that is selective, because it's just another law that hits the other end of the spectrum, because now we're select. It just doesn't make sense to me. And that's really all I have to say, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that I could.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. DeWitt, again, I'm not a rider, so please bear with me. I've got three kids, and when we go places, there are certain safety laws I have to follow in, you know, putting them in my car, making sure they're secure, at what age they sit in the front seat, what age they're in back. How does it differ? How does it differ with what I am working with my kids to keep them safe, and a kind of safety-based proposal that your kids are following certain rules that are designed to make sure that they are not injured? How is it different here?
Well, like I said, I believe there should be rules. And I'm specifically, the helmet law, I have no problem with that.
Okay.
None whatsoever. Everybody should wear a helmet. I always do.
Okay.
The problem that I have is with the two passengers. Without every manufacturer of a quad making a two-up vehicle, you put this law into effect tomorrow, and you're going to wipe out what has been said to be a third of the riders in Oregon to make it to where they can't go ride until the manufacturers catch up with the demand. Then there's the added expense of the two-up quad. It costs between $1,500 and $2,000 more than a single-passenger quad. Now, I can spend $200 and go buy a seat and add it to the back of my existing quad that is rated to haul the weight and be safe, in my opinion.
Can I follow?
Yes.
In your intro, did you say that you represented a four-state?
Three states.
In the other states that you represent, are there laws concerning passengers on ATVs?
I honestly can't answer that. I can say that I know that in Montana, which is out of our three states, you can buy legal approved seats for passengers and add them to the back of your utility ATV.
Thank you for that info.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doesn't it make you mad when you're out there riding and you just see some idiot flying by who's not responsible?
Of course it does.
Thank you.
Just one question to Mr. DeWitt, Madam Chair. Thank you. You indicate you can modify and add a back seat in your instance, and it's legal to do so in Montana. Is it legal to do so presently in Oregon to modify one of these that comes from the manufacturer? Can you put a seat on there legally?
I personally have not seen a seat that is approved. So I really, truly cannot answer that.
And Madam Chair, I just have to say that the bill does say that, that unless it's manufacturer recommended, which they won't do under this circumstance, it might be legal in some states, but it is not manufacturer recommended, therefore it would probably always be illegal to do that under 2063.
Right. The way it is worded, it would be illegal for me to do that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
How about April McRae and Monty King?
For the record, my name is Monty King. I'm president of the Oregon Vehicle Dealer Association and also Oregon Power Sports Association. I live in Salem, Oregon.
And I'm April McVeigh with Oregon Power Sports Association, and I thank you for letting us testify today.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that we support House Bill 2062. I think that everybody needs to have a helmet, and including all ages, so that's where we stand on 2062. On 2063, if I may, I'll just read my what I wrote. The Oregon Power Sports Association opposes the creation of a penalty for young people or their parents who might even be present, aimed at when Class 1 and Class 3 all-terrain vehicles are used for more than one passenger. All bikes have their own warning labels against the dangers of riding two passengers and have a maximum weight limit sticker. It is at the discretion of the riders against training standards, written warnings, and parental advice that this is done. The industry has worked hard to make ATVs safer. Their wheelbase is now wider and longer. Other modifications like longer pegs, Nerf bars, and wider seats make riding a passenger in some situations safer. Many riders don't have a lot of money, and owning a bike of a family of two or more, having a bike or two for a family of four or more is common. Many children learn to ride on the front or the back of a Class 1 or Class 3 all-terrain vehicle operated by a parent. This may seem extreme to someone who doesn't ride. However, you wouldn't drive your car without practicing with an adult first. House Bill 2063 would limit young people's training for riding an ATV and penalize parents trying to teach their children proper handling of the bikes. It would force young riders to get on bikes without the needed ride time riding two on a bike could afford them in a supervised setting. Most families use riding and training for riding as family events. This keeps children out of trouble. This would not allow them that luxury. The Oregon ATV industry would be dramatically affected by a loss of revenue to the Oregon ATV dealerships and the employees and owners who depend on them for their livelihoods. Small local businesses in those riding areas, tourism in general, towns surrounding communities, and communities who are waypoints for the thousands of riding families in Oregon and industries that support ATV enthusiasts will be significantly impacted by those needless penalties enacted in this legislation. Please consider OPSA's input and vote no for House Bill 2063.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Defendant Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. McVeigh. And I have a question about the second paragraph about bikes have their warning labels against the dangers of riding two passengers. It's the discretion of the riders against training standards, written warnings, and parental advice that it is done. Mm-hmm. So what that seems to say is that it's unsafe. Is that correct?
It's a warning label. It just states on the bike what the warnings are. So, I mean, it's like drinking alcohol. There's a warning label on it.
Right.
There's just
follow-up. So if a woman is pregnant, there's a warning that this could negatively affect your child. So there seems to be certainly the strong implication that it is dangerous to do that.
But it also says that there's a weight limit. So maybe the weight limit's 450 pounds. So if you're 150 pounds, there's no problem with having more weight on that bike.
It says against training standards, written warnings.
It's a warning. That's all it is.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, it's just a warning label.
It wouldn't have the warning label unless it were saying this is dangerous, correct?
But it's against all the things that a bike might be harmful for, you know, excessive speed, all those things. So it's, again, are you going to govern, you know, how fast they ride, or, you know, there's other issues. It's not just those things. It's a warning label that states many things. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's, I mean, it might be advantageous to bring one in.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions here? Seeing none.
Madam Chair, Monty King, OBDA and OPSA. A lot's been said here about it's dangerous. Crossing the street's dangerous. How many people died last year crossing the sidewalk? How many people died in accidents? How many people died from drinking? How many people died from everything you can think of? But if you want to have a society where there's no risk involved, there's no danger involved, then you're going to be a pretty boring society. I mean, there are people who want to have fun, and they want to go out and do the fun they want. At some point, you got to draw a line and say, you can take a risk. If you want to take a risk and maybe die, that's okay. You can't fix stupid. It's impossible. There are people that are stupid out there when they drive their ATVs, and you can't fix that, and no matter how many laws you pass, you can't help it. It's not going to help those idiots when they're out there on the ATV. They're going to hurt themselves, they're going to hurt the kids, they're going to hurt other people. Do we need another law? I think the laws are already there, where any officer of the law out there who sees somebody with three kids in backpacks driving an ATV could probably stop and say, that's dangerous. You're endangering these kids. Do we need 2064 to do it? I don't think so. That's not the kind of society that I want to live in, is where you can't do anything. Of course, maybe it would be better that way, and we wouldn't have to have insurance companies anymore. But, you know, I guess at some point you're going to make a choice. Now, five people a year dying on ATV accidents, and I guess at least half of those are 18 or over. I don't know. I don't know what the stats say. But I know at least that many people are getting hurt in crosswalks. We had a lot of legislation on crosswalks, and that had to be moved back. You know, now you can go across the crosswalk with only 8 feet between you and the car and them, instead of waiting until they get all the way across anymore. There's, you know, we got to be at least a little bit free. The whole conversation is basically, if you want to do this, you're going to give another law with another way to write another ticket that you don't really need, and it's going to affect hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. It's going to affect coastal communities and small communities all around the state and even the Northwest. It's going to cost a lot of jobs. And I don't know if you're really going to help save anybody, because the idiots are still going to get on their ATVs and they're still going to do the same stupid things they were doing before. You're going to cost a lot of jobs here.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
We get mixed up again. It's because
we look alike.
We have glasses and everything.
Handsome.
That's right. That's what the deal is. Mr. King, are you aware of similar laws to this proposal on passengers that exist in other states?
I am not. Madam Chairman, Representative Buckley, I am not.
I'm wondering just because of the concern about job loss, et cetera. You know, I do understand your comments about you can't legislate away stupidity, even though, gosh, we continue to try to do so. But would you agree that there is a balance that you have to try to find? I mean, we have another crosswalk law coming up in this session to see if it's possible to keep people safe in crosswalks. And given the fact that we're talking about children, and I'm sure you agree that even one child killed, this is one child too many. If there are ways we can mitigate it, do you have any opinion on the motorcycle bill or the helmet bill on this one?
Madam Chairman, Representative Buckley, 2062 is fine. Everybody riding one of these things or a motorcycle should wear a helmet. I don't think there's anybody I've heard say no among my membership, which is dealers, who also can sell motorcycles, by the way, And then I speak for Mrs. McVeigh as far as for motorcycle dealers and other dealers. I don't know of anybody who says no to that one. So.
If I may, Madam Chair, also I would be interested to know in those statistics how many of them didn't have helmets on and could have those five been saved if they had a helmet on, because I think that that's more of an issue than anything.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam
Butler,
Chair. I'm looking at 2063, and you have a copy of that in front of you there, Monty.
I don't have a copy in front
okay.
of me, Representative.
Ms. McVeigh.
Madam Chair. I kind of remember it. But
I'm looking specifically at line 17, where it talks about the manufacturer's recommendation. When you look at line 17, where it talks about the manufacturer's recommendation, does it say anything there about the weight that was on the that was discussed earlier? That in paragraph 2 here, maximum weight limitation stickers.
Madam Chairman, Representative Butler, I think this bill is so full of holes. It's incredible that it's got this far.
So it
doesn't say anything. There's no limitations. This thing is so rigid. I just think this thing is bad legislation the way it's written. This actually reminds me of the crosswalk bill. It's just there's so many things here that we haven't even begun to think about that we don't know what the impact is of this kind of bill.
I guess, Madam Chair, the point that I'd like to make is that there are a whole list of manufacturers' recommendations that are part of what Ms. McVeigh calls out in her testimony, that are part of the manufacturers' warning labels, stickers, and recommendations. I don't see that we're imposing a fine for those people who choose to carry 451 pounds. I don't see that we're imposing a fine for those people who do not put sufficient oil in the injectors for this these whatever is necessary. I also have a concern about the fact that we have other implements that are used regularly, daily around our home, a sander or a drill or those kinds of things. And my drill kit shows right on that the manufacturer's recommendation is that I need to be wearing a set of safety goggles when I do that. Whenever I operate that, and yet when my wife bought me that drill, she did not bring home a set of safety goggles. Now I don't know whether she has a death wish in for me or just what it is. But when I bought her a vacuum cleaner and showed a set of goggles on it, I didn't bring her those with the vacuum cleaner. So now she knows what she's going to get for Valentine's Day. But I'm looking at this, and there's a whole series of recommendations that are not being carried out in this particular in the 2063 proposed legislation. I'm anxious about that. I mean, if we want to have all of the manufacturers' recommendations adhered to in this legislation, then it probably ought to be amplified. And the other question I'd have for Mr. King and Ms. McVeigh is there any way that they could assist with an amendment or a rewrite of 2063 to make it a piece of legislation that they could support?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, no. There's no way we can support this legislation. I'm a business lobbyist. I represent business people. And they're concerned about families and all the other things that everybody else is concerned about, too. But this bill is a destructive bill to our economy, to our rural population, to our families and how they recreate. Now, yeah, it's a recommendation. You don't have more than one person on it. How'd that recommendation get there? It got there because 15, 20, 30 years ago, all the ATVs had three wheels and they kept tipping over and killing people. Now, we got rid of all those. That's why they're there, because all the lawyers got together and made $100 million off suing them. So now they got every kind of recommendation under the sun. Have you seen the recommendation labels? They're like that long. You don't even take time to read it anymore. So Madam Chair, Representative Butler, we would participate in that kind of a work group. Could we help, maybe? Would we want to see this kind of legislation passed eventually? My answer is no. I don't speak for OPSA at this point, so thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I still am anxious about to hear what we do with regard to domestic animals for farm animals on my farm. I'm really anxious about that.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Butler. I will say there is another ATV bill out there, but I think it went to the Ag Committee.
Don't we have another one here?
We do, but this is specifically for farm use.
I see.
And that is in ag. So there is a bill out there that might address your dog.
Be able to tether old Shep up, huh? Okay.
And by the way, my husband has goggles, and I made sure.
You make you vacuum with goggles, too?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to call the last three people up. Keith Turnridge, Sean Miller, and Linda Minton.
I'm with Gary Sargent.
Oh, okay. Do you want to?
Yeah, I'll have him come up with me if that's okay.
Okay. Is there room for everybody?
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll make room. I'll get out of the way.
Well, we need one more chair here. Okay.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name's Sean Miller, and I represent the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association, and we're here today in support of House Bill 2062, which is the requirement of helmets. I think that's a responsible piece of legislation. Our concerns lie in House Bill 2063, and specifically some of the exemptions on line 18 down, how we've heard a lot of the discussions of different circumstances today. And I think Representative Buckley has kind of talked about trying to strike a balance for safety, and we understand the safety concerns as we've been listening to the testimony. I'll give you one specific example that we have offered up as just an example of what we see as one of the problems in the bill. In Section 3 of the bill, there's no exemption under the two-passenger, and again, I'm referring to House Bill 2063. There's no exemption referring to two passengers if you're going to be training or educating a younger child to learn how to operate an ATV.
Right,
and,
Section 3.
There's no
Section
3.
I'm sorry. Section 2, subsection 3. Madam Chair, Representative Butler. And one of the ideas that we believe does strike a balance in safety is is having a provision in there for the purposes of teaching a child how to operate that ATV is one condition. If they were in front of you and not behind you would be another condition, and having an age limit, whether it's 12 or less, to be able to teach that person to have at least two people on that ATV. Again, you've heard that some of the concerns from the previous folks as they take their children out to these parks, to the sand dunes, to the forest, you're educating them, you're teaching them about how to operate these vehicles, and we believe responsible adults will do responsible things. And the alternative to not having, let's say, 11-year-old in front of you, for the purposes of training, is to put them on the bike by themselves at a younger age, I know my wife would not let me do that to my child at a certain age, but she probably would allow me to put it in front of me for the purposes of educating. So those are, again, we've outlined three different conditions that we believe for the purposes of safety is safer than actually putting a child on the ATV on its own to learn by itself. And so some of the flaws of the bill, that's one of the flaws that we believe. Again, I think it strikes the balance, I believe, in what you all will be contemplating. There's some other issues, as we contemplate circumstances that we'd be open to discussing. But this time I'd like to just introduce Gary Sargent, who's the vice president of OIADA, and discuss our views and expound our views. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Gary Sargent, spelled S-A-R-G-E-N-T. I'm an avid ATV rider, been riding since the very early 70s, since they were practically invented, the three-wheeler. I have children and grandchildren that are being raised on ATVs. I'm also a power sports dealer, as well as the vice president of the Oregon Independent Dealers Association. In reference to House Bill 2062 requiring helmets with chin straps, we feel that that is an absolute necessity for all ages. Anything that can prevent any trauma to the head, as was testified earlier by the surgeons and so forth, we're all for that. I applaud the Parks and Recreation Department for bringing forward some of the issues. And I do want to add some clarity, I think, that really needs to be clarified, as I am also a authorized agent for the parks. Was in their testimony that was given, it led me as an audience member to be somewhat confused that they have ATV clubs and power sports activists that are for House Bill 2063. To my knowledge, there is no clubs that are sponsoring or even endorse whatsoever House Bill 2063. In their testimony that was submitted, it clearly states that the bill was that they that the clubs endorsed was 2062. In reference to the labeling on the power sport and ATV vehicles that we sell, the manufacturers have taken the position, and this goes back way back into the three-wheeler days when they were building three-wheelers instead of the quads, is that, yes, the industry realized that they had made some mistakes in lack of education regarding that vehicle and have now moved forward in providing and paying for educations. The owners of the ATVs, once they buy it, the manufacturer will step up, pony up, and pay for the rider to have that education so that they are safe, so that they are responsible adults. And that's where a lot of the controversy comes up, is where we are dealing with irresponsible people.
The May laws, I ask a question, Madam?
Yes.
Thank you. What proportion of the buyers who buy from you take this education course?
Right now, we have one manufacturer that we sell their products to, and every one of them takes that class.
May I follow up? Thank you. So what would that class be? Would it be one evening or several evenings or Saturdays?
It's usually held on a Saturday afternoon, and state parks and rec has the instructors.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
In response to the questions on the labeling of the on the ATVs, like I was saying, is that they are just that, a warning label. Much like when you buy a vacuum cleaner, it says do not suck any water up or shock may happen. Okay, we've all vacuumed up some water, dripped in the kitchen, whatever. They're just safety warning labels. If a manufacturer stated, oh, you can ride at multiple riders, well, then it sounds like they're endorsing an activity that, you know, that is other than what things are, you know. You know, it's just that, a warning label. A pack of cigarettes have them on there. Unfortunately, they don't say this will kill you if you smoke them. But the reality is the tobacco manufacturers agreed to that type of labeling, and it's exonerated them from some liability in some cases. Again, it is on the books. We have laws that deal with negligence, recklessness, and I applaud law enforcement if they saw a parent with a backpack of one child and a belly pack of another riding around the dunes at 40, 50 miles an hour, that they would sight them and not allow them to exit the dunes on that ATV, that they would impound it, because that is absolutely reckless endangerment. And I applaud law enforcement, as they have, and I have in visiting the dunes. They are a very active and enforced presence, and that has made the sport much safer. I'm open to any questions. Thank you.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sergeant, I'm going to ask you the same question I've asked other folks that have come up. Do you know of laws in other states? Are we doing uncharted territory here, or are there laws in other states pertaining to passengers on ATVs that you're aware of?
To my knowledge, there is no laws in other states that deal with specific not permitting any riders on there. Matter of fact, in Montana, you can drive them on, get a street license and drive them on the street. Alaska, the same thing. They're riding two people. In our accessory catalogs for our accessories for ATVs, there are many manufacturers that manufacture the second seat that is a DOT approved seat that bolts right on the back on the rack. But I myself have witnessed, people that are very negligent riding on the dunes, and law enforcement should use the laws that are already in effect to deal with those situations, not create a new law.
Representative Tomei. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sergeant, I just would call your attention to the 2005 FVIA report, State All-Terrain Vehicle Requirements. 14 states have passenger prohibition for operating ATVs on public lands. And 7 of those states restrict ATV to a single rider, and 7 states restrict ATV to a single rider, except if the ATV is designed to carry a passenger.
Well, now I know which 14 states are those.
I don't know that, but maybe you could find out for us.
Thank you, Representative Tomei.
You're welcome.
I have one question for Sean, and that was on the helmets. If I know you said you're fine with the helmets, did you have any other?
No, we are supportive of that piece of legislation. I will clarify one thing on House Bill 2062, and it does say motorcycle helmet with a fastened chin strap. When we read this initially, we were concerned that a helmet with a fastened chin strap doesn't mean the DOT, which is the Department of Transportation approved, which is the actual helmets that are approved that actually will save, deter major injury if you have that helmet on. We were concerned that you could have a helmet not DOT approved. I asked the Department of Motor Vehicles if that definition includes that DOT, and they said it does. And so even though it's not in the bill, they said that definition does include those DOT-approved stickers on the helmets. And so I'll clarify that. They gave me that confirmation that it does, but I want that on the record.
Okay. Thank you. And I guess I was kind of surprised. Do a lot of people wear the helmets that don't have straps?
Well, I think that the thought of wearing a helmet, that's how it's designed to be used, is to fasten the chin strap. Case in point, when a person is hit by a car, usually their shoes are still in the same place. Well, what happens when you're ejected or get into an accident situation, your helmet would probably eject off and would not give any protection whatsoever unless the chin strap was fastened. And to answer your question, do we see a lot of people doing that? I couldn't answer to how many that is, but the important thing is that to have that in there, that verbiage in there, so that it gives law enforcement a tool to either cite or warn an individual on the correct way to wear a helmet. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Quick question.
Oh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. Do you wear a helmet when you trailer up your ATVs?
When we trailer them up?
Yeah.
Personally, we have taken our riding gear off, and we're in our tennis shoes, our riding boots are off, and we're loading them? No.
To me, colleagues, and again, for some of you who don't ride ATVs, this may seem foreign, because I think the visualization that's been created for us is these machines that go 80 miles an hour across the sand from start to finish, and that's not the reality. I wear a helmet. I think wearing a helmet makes perfect sense. I'm prepared to support House Bill 2062. What concerns me, though, is that this is so draconian that we're not allowing common sense into these pieces of legislation. For example, when you go to trailer up your ATVs, as the gentleman said, you've taken off your gear. You're loading these up. And under this scenario, if you don't have your helmet strapped on as you load up an ATV, you're subject to a fine. And to me, I think Oregonians expect us to have a little bit of common sense, and this legislation doesn't allow it. And I would hope if it goes to work session, we would allow some type of amendment that builds in some common sense and assumes Oregonians have just a little bit of ability to manage themselves.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Turnridge.
Yeah, I'm Keith Turnridge from Applegate Rough Riders, Dallas, Oregon. Q-U-R-N-I-D-G-E. I've been active in this sport since 66. I'm an amputee, but I still ride motorcycles and quads. So it's a great family recreation. I think we have enough controls and laws and on all this helmet and two passenger stuff already. You're trying to run it in the ground, I believe. It's going to hurt our economy if you take away family recreation, no matter how it's just going to. I wore helmets from Anchorage to Cabo. You know, I believe in a helmet, but there's places and times when it's kind of nice not to be wearing one. If you're out cutting trails and you're jumping on your quad and moving 100 feet, quarter of a mile, whatever. If you're out hunting, it's kind of nice not to have a helmet on. We don't go 80 miles an hour. We're going 8 miles an hour or 5 or something. There's just a place where common sense, we ought to be able to choose for ourselves, and the minors, I believe, should have the helmets. And that takes care of my thought on that. On this riding double, like this other fellow said, there's a couple, three on the market that are designed with a longer wheelbase. They're 4-2 up. And a lot of these sports quads, I shouldn't say this, but they're not probably very safe for 2-up. They're open wheeled. You get your foot under a wheel, you're eat right off of that thing. Most of the ones with them, now I'm blank, I'm running out of words. The ones with utility quads got floorboards. You can't get your foot under a tire on one of them. You go on the outside of it. So there's got to be some more thought put into this riding two up, I believe. Somebody says, if you got somebody broke down or needs rescued, they got somebody haul them in, then you say, well, that's at the discretion of the officer. One will look at it and say, fine, you've done a good job. And the other one, he writes you a damn ticket. So how do we stand on this? Something's got to be cut and dried a little better than this. We have a lot of fun out there in them woods, and sometimes I go to the beaches, and a lot of times I see a lot of people that don't use much common sense, and I don't know how you instill this into people, period. I mean, 80% maybe are pretty straight, good. 10% or 20 are just crazy. And no matter what you put in there for laws, they're still going to be there. And I don't have the authority to tell somebody to stop, you know, what they tell me. And and it's hard to enforce all this. Don't know what the answer is for sure, but it's got to be worked on. And as a club, we try to push safety, and we do a lot of family-type recreation, poker runs, and that's what it's all about. And if you take a lot of this stuff away, why, it's going to hurt the economy of this state. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any questions, so Linda, if you want to go ahead.
Hello. My name is Linda Minton, and I'm a mom, primarily. And 2 weeks ago, this really didn't even come into my scope. We spend about 65 days per year recreating with our family with ATVs. We're very blessed that we have that opportunity. We not only ride in the trails, but we also ride in the dunes. We have sport and utility quads. My children were, I believe, 8 and 9 when we first started into this sport, something that wasn't, again, it just, our friend said, hey, we're going to go out. Do you want to go with us? We bought 2 utility quads because we also have a farm that we use our quads on there to move grain and hay, and Sunday's manure day. A couple things that I think that we really need to address is supervision is key. And if you look at most of the statistics with the deaths, which I've been spending quite a bit of time in the last 2 weeks doing, supervision is generally not there in some of these tragic accidents. And generally, as Representative Tomei had indicated, too, helmets are generally not on these kids. But you also have to remember, too, that a lot of these incidences are happening on private ground when children have the keys. They're not regulated by their parents. They go hop on their bicycle, they go hop on their quad. Or there's a lot of times where, you know, it's not within a family activity that these children are normally getting hurt. And I think we certainly need to address the supervision part. As far as helmets, absolutely. Everyone that I ride with, they wear helmets. Do I agree when we're loading our bikes? No, because there's a lot of things that are happening when we're loading our bikes. You know, we're loading quads, we're loading bicycles, we're loading rollerblades, we're loading, and, you know, you've got your kids around you, we have 2 dogs, and, you know, you want to be able to be aware of your surroundings when you're loading the bikes. And we're moving the bikes probably 15 feet, and we're going maybe a mile, you know, because we're just taking them up a ramp. The other thing that I would be concerned with the helmet law is that when we go out and recreate, as you probably will understand, we're not just riding. It's not like we jump on our bikes and we ride for 4 or 5 hours and we're done. We ride to an area where we can watch some of the older kids play, you know, just with their dunes. They're playing on the side of the hill. And we'll ride to the beach, and then we'll ride to a lake, and we'll maybe go fishing. Sometimes they'll strip off their ATV clothes and their boots, and they're in the water. I mean, with the helmets, my concern is when we're parked and sitting on our quads, I mean, because it doesn't direct that either. You know, we certainly ride with helmets. But we pop those puppies off and hang them on our handlebar when we're stopped. And our kids flop into the sand, and they run down and harass salamanders in the creek. These are the type of activities that we do. So I would like to see the helmet portion of that address when you are using your quad as a chair rather than you're using your quad as a vehicle. Because it wouldn't be any fun to sit there with a helmet on while your kids are playing. And I'm getting a little too old to be sitting in the sand and getting up out of it, frankly. With regard to riding double, we've been talking about kids riding double, but we haven't addressed the fact that there's a lot of people that ride double because they have a disability or because they're aged. I have a 75-year-old, she's 74, she's going to kill me. She's a 74-year-old mother-in-law who once a year, in June, we probably have 30 family members. We're talking grandma, grandpa, aunts, uncles, kids, big kids, little kids, the whole shamoli. For Father's Day, we go over to our Oddfellows campground. And there, you know, we have another group of another 30 people that we've become friends with, including our 80-year-old very dear friend who still rides a quad very safely with his wife. And this community of people is absolutely fabulous. I wish that you would have an opportunity to enjoy this as we have, because it is truly a gift. My children are friends. We get to come back and talk about how cool the ride was. And, you know, suddenly an 80-year-old man is really cool because
he has to wear a little skull cap. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a little piece of material you tie behind your head, and then he sticks his helmet on because his bald head rubs in his helmet. And mostly it's teenagers that you see with those skull caps in the news. We tease him, but it's a common ground, and our children have been blessed to be able to see and recreate with other adults as well as family members in this. With regard to the devils, I see it upsets me more than anything because I love children, not just my own, but other children. And I can understand where this type of legislation is coming from. Unfortunately, it comes back to the parents. And whether the parent is in the dunes on a quad, or they're dropping their kid off in town at a skate park, or they're just not even there for their child, and their child can jump on their bicycle running to town and just essentially be unsupervised the majority of their day. We put our children at risk when we're not with them. And we can also put our children when we're with them. There is an attitude and a mentality that I see, and it bothers me when I see a two-year-old stuck on the tank of a Banshee going hell-bent for leather, excuse the terminology. But to ban people who are riding 2 and 3 miles an hour, or 4, carefully, my mother-in-law can't get on a utility quad, and she has problems with her hips and her knees. And 1 year she went out on the utility quad, and she had a hard time walking for the next 3 days. And keep in mind, we're only going probably a mile and a half. We've got firewood on the front. We've got a dog on somebody else's quad. We've got camping chairs. We've got towels. And, I mean, you name it, we have it on there. And we go and spend the day at the lake. There is absolutely no other way my mother-in-law could get there. My other girlfriend that we ride with, she has a mother that is visually impaired. She cannot operate her own ATV. And for us, we have utility quads. We have utility quads that have seats that are this wide and that long and certainly can accommodate two people on that quad. Am I advocating that you put a two-year-old on there and start jumping the dunes? Absolutely not. We have laws in force. Unfortunately, in the 65 days a year that we're there, it is rare that we see a law enforcement official. Mm-hmm. And that is where the problem lies. We have to enforce the regulations that we have. I'm sorry. And I think before you do that, you're punishing people who are recreating with their family that are causing no harm or danger to anyone. We, in our entire group of riding, we have not had one injury. Not one hangnail, not one stub toe. I mean, they're at more risk in the park where we camp, riding the rollerblades around, you know, and they wear helmets then also. But please address everyone. Please address the disabled. Please address the elderly. We have friends that have gone out and bought grizzlies, which are completely adequate to have someone on the back of it. And you'll see an elderly person with his wife who has no intent or desire to operate a quad on her own. If you do implement this, please consider that there should be a time frame that will allow these people to not have to choke up another $10,000 for a quad. I believe there's three manufacturers that are currently manufacturing quads that are double. But something that you have to also consider is most injuries to the elderly and to young are from crush injuries, weight. Mm-hmm. On these larger quads that will take two people, they weigh over 700 pounds versus 400 or 500 pounds. So you have to take that into consideration. Are you safer on a smaller quad that is big enough? If anyone's seen a utility quad, you know, my mother-in-law, and I'm not tiny, certainly, my mother-in-law and I can fit on there just fine, and we've got about this much room in the back end of it. Common sense, yes, and I know that there's a lot of people that don't use common sense, and I certainly wish more than anything that we had the enforcement, out there to address those concerns. The funding, I don't know if that's a funding problem. I don't know if it's because it's federal land versus state, but it's something that we really do need to address. There is a real problem, but it's not with the majority of people who are enjoying this activity with their family that these bills will punish. And I don't mean to address the helmet because I think that that's very important. And I hope you take that into consideration. Is you're punishing the 80, 90% that are really doing a wonderful thing for their family. My children are with us. They're not running around town. They're not hanging out with their friends. They're not walking down the railroad track going fishing when it's not even fishing season. My kids are with us. They both are 3.75 and higher students. They both play instruments. They're very nice children. They speak well with adults, and I think it's because of the opportunities that they've had to be able to share this with multi-ages and with people that are less fortunate than ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Buckland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was a little distracted by your testimony. I had this image of taking my mother-in-law camping. It was very, very distracting for me. I'd like to loop around, though, to the idea of possible addressing this in terms of a speed limit with children or passengers on the ATV, because it seems from everything we've heard today, there's some very common sense uses of ATVs, but the concern is people getting on and acting like yahoos, and you know, they got somebody on the back, they're endangering somebody, and then the price that we all pay for that in terms of the cost of care, et cetera, and the impact on families. Would you be amenable to at least discussing that as a possibility?
Oh, absolutely, and I think that when you slap somebody with a $180 fine and they're not following the letter of the law anyway, it's just not enough. I mean, it needs to be significant enough when someone is violating or endangering their child. It needs to hurt, and it needs to be dramatic. It needs to be. We all camp in campgrounds, and I would love to see nothing more than an officer come in with a kid who's been unsupervised, walk them into the middle of the campground, lights going, get everybody's attention, and give them a $1,500 fine.
Whoa.
Your child. Absolutely, because, you know, they are putting their child at risk, and they're endangering our recreation for our family because of their poor choices. And I think that if law enforcement would take action a little bit more dramatically, then you would see word gets around in those groups.
Right.
You know, my son came in, and, ooh, are we in trouble? And, you know, call the dad off. Suspend their license for 30 days. I mean, punish the people who aren't following the laws and not using good common sense.
Are you interested, perhaps, in a part-time job with the...
It's been a full-time plus job the last 2 weeks. One thing that I forgot to address is everyone's saying 60, 70 miles an hour, and you're getting this... I have a speedometer on my utility quad, and we ride with our children constantly. Our children ride in a line. Our children, they're afraid actually to get out of the line, and I think it's just because repetitively that's the way we've ridden, and they don't know even how to ride by themselves anymore because they, you know, they have to follow somebody. We don't go fast. When you're talking about 70 miles an hour, I don't know if I could keep my head forward with my helmet because the wind force inside your helmet when you're going 25, you know, it's a pretty good clip. If we really want to open it up, I mean, there's a place called I-5, if you're familiar with the Florence area, and it's just a flat, semi, it's not loose sand. There's some moisture there, and that's just kind of the place people will open it up. I don't think we've ever gotten 30, and 30 feels like we are just flying. And that's true with all these families. I mean, 70, sure. I mean, I don't know how anybody could do 70 there. Don't quote me, because I'm sure that somebody can prove me wrong. But generally speaking, you know, 25 is pretty quick. And I would say our average speed is maybe 8 or 10 miles an hour. And if you would see the way we ride, you would probably think, wow, we're 30 long in a big, long snake, and we just work our way through the dunes with our family, and we've got an adult in the front, and we've got an adult in the rear, and those kids are told to stay in the tire tracks in front of them. And, you know, it's the way families should ride, and many do. I mean, most do. Most really care for their children. This is an expensive sport to get into. It's certainly... isn't a sport that I dreamed up on my own. I mean, I like to read books and drink tea, and, you know, now I'm actually more involved with my children, which is a blessing. I mean, I am very thankful for this opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Buckland.
Madam Chair, I this probably isn't an informal question, but one thing that Linda did raise was the issue of watching their children and having to, you know, sitting on their machines. I think that there is a question whether or not that really would be operating machine, and 2062 refers to
people who operate Class 1 and Class 2, and a person is operating Class 2 and Class 3, altering vehicles on premises of public land. So I'm guessing that sitting around watching while the machine is either off or idling probably would not be operating the machine, but I still believe that the issue of loading and unloading and having to wear a strapped, buttoned, fastened chin strap on a helmet is a question that probably isn't addressed in 2062.
Thank you. Okay. I don't see any other questions, so I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2062 and 2063. And I think we're out of time today, so we're not going to do the public hearing on 2064. And I know we had one or two people that were outside of 100 miles, and I my apologies. If you'd like, you could send your testimony in and not come back, but we'd like to have you back if you can come. So thank you for staying, and thank everybody for your testimony. So I'm closing the House Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.